Let's go to D.C. Bill Flores joins us this morning. How are you, Bill?
Howdy, Scott. Doing great. It's good to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Let's talk about yesterday's numbers that came out. Apparently, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has met the 7 million that the Congressional Budget Office said that they needed to. And if you add state exchanges in there, we may have 9 million people who have signed up. Your thoughts?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the real numbers are. You know, the sign-up numbers are not as important as the people who have actually paid the premiums. And the reject rate, or the, let me rephrase that, the non-payment rate earlier on and at the end of February was around 20%. And so we'll have to see what the, how the numbers actually sort out. The other thing is that we don't know how many people have actually signed up for new health care coverage, because as we know, there were millions of folks who lost their health care coverage because of the way Obamacare was designed. Several plans were, or several folks' insurance were canceled, policies were canceled. And so we'll have to wait and see how this sorts out over the next couple of weeks, or next few weeks, actually.
Well, see, the Washington Post ABC poll shows that for the first time, more Americans support Obamacare than oppose it.
Well, I haven't seen that poll. I would be very surprised at that, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Well, Republicans are 20% in favor and 78% against, and Democrats, as you would expect, would be much higher. It's interesting. That's the first time that it's ticked over to more than 50%. There seems to be that there are some people who don't like the idea, but what would you say to those Americans who seem to have a sense of resignation that they do have to sign up and get on the train and go?
Well, I mean, that's what the law says. Either you sign up or pay a penalty, and I've never been one to advocate that people break the law. So, I would recommend that they follow the law, and if they don't sign up, then go ahead and pay the penalty, and that way they're in compliance because they have paid the fine, if you will.
Right. Bill Flores joining us from D.C., as must be done in the all legislation having to do with taxes and such, has to start in the House. That's the way that has to go. And part of the plan has to be a budget. And yesterday, the Republicans rolled out their budget. I'd like to get your thoughts on this, because I know it's not a budget that all Republicans are on board with.
Well, not at this point in time. I do believe by the time that the budget comes to the floor in the next several days that we will have virtually everybody on board with it. This budget follows the same tracks as what we've done in the last three Path for Prosperity budgets. Start with, it balances in 10 years, which is what we've tried to do each of the last 2 years as far as the budgets that we put together. Because of the fact that revenues are predicted to be weaker than originally thought because of Obamanomics, we had to cut an additional 5.1, or had to bring our spending cuts up to 5.1 trillion in order to keep the thing in balance. We still reform major entitlements like Medicare and Medicaid so that they are protected for today's seniors as well as those that will be seniors in 7 years from now. We also have repeal Obamacare inside of the budget. And we also assume that we're going to have some sort of tax reform that makes the tax code flatter and more efficient and fairer for everybody and broadens the base.
Bill Flores joining us this morning from D.C. I'd like to get your thoughts. I know there's some thinking from some key House Republicans that maybe the president will work with Congress in making reforms to parts of the Dodd-Frank Act. How does that look in your estimation?
Well, I wouldn't expect that they would. I will tell you, Dodd-Frank is next to Obamacare has probably been harder on lower-income Americans than any other law. They just don't feel it yet, but it has really taken them out of the housing market virtually altogether. I mean, if you're a low-income American today, you can hardly get a bank account. You need to go to payday lenders. If we go back to the premise of what this law was all about when Barney Frank came up with it, it was to protect lower-income, low-information borrowers, and all it's done is it's eliminated their ability to get bank accounts because banks can't afford to take the risk of giving them or opening a bank account for them. It's also put the banks in a position where they can't do any type of mortgage that's not a traditional 15- and 30-year mortgage, and the regulatory requirements have gotten so stiff that the banks can no longer afford to make a mortgage of $100,000 or less. And so if you think about it, all those people are actually wiped out of the housing market, that were previously able to get those types of mortgages. And then, you know, even recently I had Mobile Home Dealers Association come to me and said that they can no longer finance mobile homes on the lot. And so your typical mobile home buyer doesn't go to the bank and get a commitment for a mobile home loan before they go buy their new home. And so they can't even buy, or they're not even able to buy mobile homes anymore. And what that's done is basically stuck tens of millions of lower-income Americans into continue to have to rent from in apartments or and rent substandard housing. It really has been harder on the poor than anybody else.
We're talking with Bill Flores this morning from D.C. I don't think we've had a chance to discuss it since the Senate passed an extension on the unemployment benefits. What's your thinking? Is it going to find any ground in the House?
Probably not the way it's currently constructed. I need to look at the Senate bill. I haven't seen it yet. They just passed it last week. And look at the pay for it. In the past, they passed some unemployment extensions, but they haven't paid for it. They just basically said, here, we're going to give a blank check to raise the deficit. We do not do that in the House. And we'll have to take a look and see if they actually paid for it or not. If they didn't pay for it, it won't pass the House.
Finally today, what kind of action is going to be taking place in the House before we talk to you again?
Well, we've got several things. As everybody knows, that Obamacare cuts the standard work week from 40 hours to 30 hours, and predictably employers have responded by cutting employee hours. We're going to have a bill this week to restore the standard work week definition back up to 40 hours so that we can help alleviate the impact on the lower-income Americans that were adversely impacted by Obamacare. That will happen today, and then on Friday we're going to have the Pro-Growth Budgeting Act, which says that we will use dynamic scoring when we have bills come to the floor of the House, that they will be dynamically scored so that we can see what the real impact on the economy is by passing those bills. Right now they use what's called static scoring, which doesn't reflect the real-world impact of what happens to the economy or to jobs when bills come to the floor.
Okay. Okay. Bill Flores, and I guess they can Google that if they want to find out. That's getting out into the weeds. But, I mean, it's important, most definitely, the way that you score any bill, and as you say, the reality of what it will do in everyday life. So, folks, go Google that, and you'll be able to know a lot more about it. Because, after all, Bill's a CPA, and he understands a lot better than some of us do. Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning.
Great talking to you, Scott, and I look forward to visiting with you next week.
All right, thank you.